Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million.
Hello, North Bank Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Just met Wilmer on the board. SP Futures down 14. We got Dow Futures down 10. Nasdaq down 225. So we're all over the place this morning. We were down a lot more. And we're trying to figure this out. We've got Apple is down another 240. So Apple's down from 145 to 123. That's a pretty big move. And our top ticker, 145. Tesla was down yesterday. It's down another $32 today. And Matt Weber's favorite. Brennan Cornan's private. He's got about 500 of these things. The crypto is he's down 7,500 today in the Bitcoin, so he's not happy. What are you doing with all those Bitcoins, Brennan? Brennan, are you here? He's checking his Bitcoin, maybe.
Yeah, I'm checking my Bitcoin. There we go.
Yeah, it's down, where did it tap, maybe? 57,
maybe?
Yeah, it's 46 this morning.
Yeah, I think 57 is the most recent all-time high. It does this every couple months, right? It shoots way up, and then it goes down a huge correction, and then it goes back up again.
Probably the last
nothing
week.
New. It's been doing this for 5 years.
Well, I've talked to probably three or four clients because we're calling everybody with your reviews and so forth. And across three or four of them, they have some of this. They'll never sell it.
Well, every now and then, I think it just gets notoriety, and that drives the price up even more. It's either that or all those day traders, those individual day traders, like they do with GameStop, just keep bidding it up and bidding it up.
Do you know anybody who bought some years ago that doesn't have their password? I've heard a few of those people around.
I heard a story about a guy who's in that situation, and if I'm right, they like for the password for that, you only get 10 tries, and at the end of 10 tries, you can never access your account again. There was one story that I read where one guy had something like $200 million worth of Bitcoin values that he can't access.
I have a real stupid question from my attorney buddy Brendan. That's a really stupid rule. Who do you sue? I mean, it doesn't give them the right. I mean, if you try and get into your bank account like 100 times and never show up, at least at some point the bank will drop that money at the Secretary of State's office, like under your name. Does Bitcoin just get to steal it?
I guess so. I don't know the answer.
It has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It has to. He chose to put it on a password protected drive.
Okay,
that's where he chose to put his Bitcoin.
Right,
and he chose to put it on something that was had a limited number of passwords that would terminate after. Apparently, so people couldn't hack in and steal his Bitcoin.
Okay, but
so it's his choice. It has nothing to do with Bitcoin.
But I have the same question. The same question is on the table, counselor or witness, who gets it? I'm saying you can try and buzz in a Lakeside Bank all you want until finally they'll
say, let me ask you this. If you have a chest full of cash in your house and your house burns down,
if it burns
the
down,
cash is gone.
All right.
It's the same thing.
No, it's not because there's not there for anybody.
Well, it's on a drive, and if the drive destroys itself because you put some stupid password-protected algorithm on there and then you forget the password and the drive is gone, if I take that drive and throw it in the bottom of the ocean, the Bitcoin's gone.
All right, what I'm saying is the Bitcoin's not gone. There's Bitcoin 444-33 is still someplace.
I mean, I guess the serial numbers on that cash that burned up is still someplace, too. What does that mean?
The difference is Bitcoin knows that there's a coin there that somebody that's worth a... It's worth what? $46,000 belongs to somebody. And if somebody's never going to show up, who gets it is my question. It's a simple question.
I think I just gave you a simple answer.
You're saying it evaporates.
It's gone, right. Just like cash that burned. If it's destroyed, it's destroyed. There's a limited number of it, and if it's destroyed, it's destroyed.
But Bitcoin is an ether. It's a number. It's not destroyed. Your bank account at Lakeside's not destroyed.
True.
I'm saying there is that Bitcoin's.
But if you mine the Bitcoin and you have a quote unquote physical version of it on a drive, then and the drive gets destroyed.
If you mine it, okay, that's the whole thing. I thought that people couldn't if you bought one and you. See, the people like
when the I'm just talking about the password protected story that Brennan was talking about. My understanding was that this person had Bitcoin on a drive that they mined it. They have the physical Bitcoin and they put it on a password protected drive because, you know, they didn't want anyone hacking into their drive and stealing
it. My man who sits next to you in the morning, president of PTI Securities, my brother. I think years ago he went to one of the vending machines just to see what the thing was all about, and he bought $25 worth. Of course, they bought it. They charged him $5. So he only got $20. So God knows what percentage of a Bitcoin he got. I don't think he knows where his password is. So that thing's still out there. He didn't mine it.
That's a different story. That's what I intended to ask.
He doesn't
access and get his password. That's different. Matt is right. The story that I'm talking about is a guy had one of those password protected things that gives him 10 chances to access it. After that, he's locked down forever.
Well, anybody who is smart enough, I use the term anal enough, to know how to mine one of those things is probably not the kind of guy to forget his password. I'm thinking somebody would put.
You wouldn't think.
I would think somebody put, you know, $300 or $400 into the thing 5 years ago or 6 years ago, and somehow or another moved or whatever, or that phone stopped working and the password was on the phone. I think there's all kinds of those people around, and those are alive. I mean somebody knows what Dan bought, right? It's there. It's someplace. And I didn't even what you guys are talking about. That's way over my head. The guy who actually mined the thing. Anyway, Brennan, I have a series of questions for you. Well, you can be the witness. When I first heard of Lori Lightfoot grabbing a $281 million from the COVID fund, which I think is happening countrywide, but I don't know, but and use it for the police force. When you have people writing all these checks, basically, and they're all broke, let's take the state of Illinois. Every time they write a check that they don't have, is there an implied loan coming from the? I mean, where do they get the money? How does it clear? They can't be going out for a bond issue every week, and the federal government.
They don't bond the issue. The money comes out from the federal government from grants, and it goes into the city's account. They're supposed to be limits on how those funds are used, and like for COVID related stuff, there are a series of expenses that you can use for COVID relief. I'm not sure how or why they classify the police overtime as part of that, but the remedy would be for the federal government to go back and ask Lori Lightfoot for the money by saying it's inappropriate use of the funds.
Well, actually, the question I was zeroing in on, which I'm having trouble asking questions these days, in general, it appears that a lot of states are in serious deficit. And I know that the federal government loans them money on some occasion, but I don't know that it's necessarily open-ended to where we spent $100 million more this month than we had. By the way, give us the $100. Is it that open-ended?
It varies. It varies on the legislation of and what's been done, if it's a loan or if it's a grant. Your question about what happened, but the release of the money is supposed to have terms and conditions on it that when the money is withdrawn, it's supposed to comply with certain spending requirements. And if not, the federal government can, if it's a grant, get the money back, even though normally with a grant you don't pay it back. If it's a loan, they can accelerate the repayment of the loan to get the money back quicker.
But even in, I guess what I'm going back to my Treasury experience that I had a little bit of, even the state of Texas right now, obviously they're writing checks right and left, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think with some stuff, the federal government, if there's some kind of a disaster, which there was, they probably will loan Texas some money. Now, Trump didn't like to loan money to the states he didn't like, but I think in the end he probably did. But I mean, is it Can you just spend it and say, this is how much I know? I guess what I'm saying, is it open-ended, or is every single time Texas needs another $100 million, is it another run through Congress in Washington, or they just spend what they want and say, yep, we're up to $2 billion, we'll get it to you one of these days? I mean, I don't know how that all works.
Typically, the way that it works is a pool of money is made available from the federal government to the state or to the municipalities. If I was trying to help you out in a disaster and I gave you $1,000, I wouldn't have a restriction on that. So you don't have to come back to me every time you want to spend $50 of that $1,000. You'd have it in your account as successful to you. Otherwise, it would be an unworkable system if they had to go back every time to the federal government or go back to the bank every time they had a bank loan. So the money is available for them to pay out with certain restrictions. They're supposed to write down what they're spending it for. Like, you couldn't go out and buy a couple of bottles of whiskey and say that's related to disaster relief. And sooner or later, in the audit process, the federal government will come back and say, well, wait, you just spent a couple of $100 on Patron liquor. You're not supposed to do that. So you have to pay that back. You can't use that money for that purpose.
But on a cash basis, the money's there today. You can write a check to Brendan, but you don't have to say, don't cash it for 2 months until we get the okay from the federal government. The cash is someplace that you can draw down today.
Yes.
And every state can just do it when they feel like, and there's no cutoff?
No, there are limits in the amount of money. I mean, when the grant is given, there's a grant document. Usually there's a grant document or a loan document that has the terms and conditions. It says, for the next month or the next 6 months, you have access to this amount of money.
Okay, all right. Fair enough.
And not only do you have access to this, but you can spend it for things that are related to ABC.
I know this is probably digging way too deep in this, but I know in the end, Texas probably will get the money through disaster relief and so forth. I'm just trying to figure out how you bridge the cash gap, because you need the money today, and you can't go say, here's how much I spent 6 months now, or else where are you going to get it, from a bank or someplace?
Now, it's like the guarantee of the federal government. I mean, like, for the immediate relief, because this isn't going to, the money's not being brought by plane and delivered to a bank in Texas, but it's accessibility. It's like a backstop.
Okay.
The federal government is acting as a backstop to Texas by saying, you can spend $1 million for disaster relief right now, and if you don't have the money in your account to back it up, we will guarantee, effectively guarantee, that you can pay the money, that we'll provide the money as a backstop.
All right, so if it's a question of a week or so, some bank will float you, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. What is Matt, you've been reading about this, I think. What is the deal with these $5,000 electric bills people are getting? What is that all about?
Oh, that's a variable rate electric bill. Think of that like the swap deals that were done in the marketplace the last couple of years.
I still get those things.
On a balance with LIBOR.
I still get those calls from getting a different electrical thing on my cell phone, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if you don't get anything, how do you get a bill?
Well, you do get a bill. The idea is that it's a variable rate payment that you make for your electric bill. If the market or demand is really low, then you pay a low amount. If the market rate is demand is really high, you pay an exorbitant amount of money because you're effectively bidding against the other people in the state for a limited amount of energy. It's not a fixed rate of X dollars per kilowatt hour.
Well, but the companies, the electric company still has to deliver it to you, right?
Right.
So the guy said I'm using the Wisconsin utility, and all of a sudden some power shows up, and they say, okay, Carmel Center was shut down, so you're getting it from this Wisconsin utility. You know, by the way, they want $1,000 for yesterday. Is that essentially what's happening?
Yeah, they're going by market demand, what the market demand is, and effectively bidding up the price because of the limited amount of supply in a critical situation. Matty, is that your understanding too?
I don't know. I don't know anything about this, what you guys are talking about.
Well, have you been getting the stuff in the mail that you can go get your power from somewhere else in Camelot Edison?
I don't know.
Jill takes care of all
that? I don't look at any of that stuff.
Yeah, I don't either. But I mean, it's sort of weird because if the power is not on, I don't know how the hell you're getting a bill. I guess that's my That's my question.
No, the power is on.
Okay.
The rate, the price that you're paying for that use, and it's still measured the same way. But the difference is, like with ComEd, you're paying X cents per kilowatt hour for the power that you use on a regular basis. So it's a fixed amount.
Okay.
Think about going to fill up your car with gas. When you pull into the gas station, you see the sign on the marquee that says $2.50 a gallon for gas.
Okay.
But in high demand with a variable rate, maybe today the market is $2.50 a gallon, but because there's a disaster, all of a sudden the gas is either higher supply or in higher demand, so that $2.50 a gallon goes to $150 a gallon.
All right. Well, this is, I thought,
and you've committed to pay whatever the market rate is at the time.
Well, I thought this was essentially, maybe Texas doesn't have this, but Matty, we talked about this years ago. Isn't that what Enron scoundrels were doing? They were.
Where is Enron located?
I thought it was. Well, they were, California was the problem.
No, right? They were located in Texas.
Okay, but I'm saying
smartest guys in the room.
But I'm saying, but the issue in Texas, I seem to recall this, Matty, that what they were doing was they had power problems in California, and they had variable rates on the stuff that came from out of state. So Enron was shipping California power that they made in California out of state and then bringing it back as a variable power and like tripling the price, right? Wasn't that the deal? But they were routing it out of state and then routing it back?
Yeah, it was something like that.
God, it's genius, isn't it? It almost makes you want to tear up. Here, let me take the power, run the power across the street and bring it back and say it's not California power, right? You know, only humans can do this, Brent. Isn't it special? Venkman, I mean, would never think of doing something like that. What do you mean? It's like, Venkman's his dog, Brent. I mean, I think that's what they did, right? They were running California power across the border and bringing it back.
It was something like that. But, you know, the thing about it in Texas is that Texas specifically, a number of years ago, voted to deregulate their energy industry. And they made sure that all their electrical power came from within the state of Texas, which meant that they're not subject to any federal rules because there's no interstate connectivity or interstate transport of their energy. So this whole idea of small and limited government allowed them within the state of Texas to make their own rules. And it's great so long as there's no big energy drain or no surprises. But in a case like this, for a couple of days' power, you're seeing bills of $10,000, $15,000, $18,000 that are being charged to the folks.
Well, Brennan, you know I'm not a huge fan of regulation, but when you're talking about the main pathways, essentially the interstate highway of electricity in Texas, that has to be somewhat up to spec everywhere and has to have some rules involved, like a softball game, for God's sake, where you can't have 15 different specs or the thing's a disaster. Right?
As you're seeing right now.
Yeah. I mean, even now, the grid in Illinois, it's, if you talk to people inside, and I don't know if you have it, if you'd hang around at the Tripoli once in a while, because I haven't been there in months with the COVID thing, but there's guys that work in the electrical industry, and they'll tell you that a lot of times windmills can't come online because Commonwealth Edison doesn't want them, because they got their stuff online at the same time. So, how the whole grid works, I mean, there sort of has to be rules. I mean, just because you build a windmill doesn't mean that Indiana Power needs to take it, right? Unless somebody says,
right,
hey, you better take it, right? Because somebody gets to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's really kind of a, I think there need to be some kind of rules, even though I'm not a huge fan of regulation. I think over time, and you're closer to the state than me. I had a client years ago, a poor guy, I don't know, he'd be really old now, but he was a guy that used to, he was a nuclear, I guess he had done some work in nuclear plants, but what's the outfit that always fighting Commonwealth Edison? It's the people, something, something.
Citizens Utilities Board?
Yeah, something like that. And, he said, it's so bizarre, the difference in, resources. He said, I'd go down to the, Interstate Commerce Commission, I'd walk in and there's like four people from Commonwealth Edison or Peoples or somebody, and they look at me like, what are you doing here? And they're just relentless. He says, if you can get people to essentially volunteer and come up with money to partially or totally kill a rate increase, he says, you can't make it to the local bar and have a beer before the, They've already got another one on the table. And then mm-hmm. and he goes, yeah. and they can deduct the price of their lawyers and lobbyists as a business expense that you pay for. So if you fight them for 2 years and you win, and it costs them in their mind, you know, $40 million to lose, that becomes an expense.
It's
part of the rate increase. You know, he says you just can't, over a period of time, they just overwhelm the people that are there. Not to mention, even if you get into the seedy stuff where the people and the regulators get hired by Commonwealth Edison when they retire after 20 years or that kind of crap. I mean, even not counting that, it's not an even game after a while. And,
that's right.
And you wonder, how do you get around that, Brendan? On a long-term basis, how do you get around it? I don't know, because people.
One way is to have effective legislators who won't allow that to happen in the legislation. That's a pipe dream. I recognize that's a pipe dream. The other way is to make sure that you've got some investigative powers of somebody like the U.S. attorney. That's part of the big sticking point right now about John Lausch, the U.S. attorney in the Northern District of Illinois, being asked to resign because Biden took office. And I'm not sure. Have you been following that story?
Very little bit. I figured you would talk about it.
Well, this is his last week in office under the normal course, because typically what happens when a president comes in, he asks all the U.S. attorneys across the country for their resignation. And he'll accept all of the resignations or he'll pick and choose. And Lausch is one of the guys that apparently has not been told he's going to stay on. There's two or three that I'm aware of.
All right, back up a little bit. Set the stage. How many of these guys are there?
There are 94 across the United States.
All right, so how many of them?
Because there are 94 U.S. attorney offices in various states.
All right, so in a Trump four-year.
These guys are like a mini Merrick Garland, who's up now for appointment as U.S. attorney.
Okay, so now Trump, don't know how he did in this area, but in his 4 years, how many of the 94 changed since when he got in there, do you think?
About 120. Because they didn't last the 4 years.
A lot of them didn't last? So he got rid of everybody. Is that normal?
Yes, it is normal. When a new president comes in, it's normal that he asks all of the U.S. attorneys and all across the country to tender a resignation, whether the president accepts them or not. For example, I think it was Obama kept Peter Fitzgerald in as U.S. attorney in Illinois.
Well, didn't Durbin ask him to do that? Durbin asked him to do that, right?
But Durbin is asking him to keep, Durbin and Tammy Duckworth are both asking Biden to keep John Lausch in as U.S. attorney currently in Illinois.
Is he a pretty good guy? Is that obviously the reason?
He is a pretty good guy. He's also the one who brought the investigation and the charges against Eddie Burke, and is leading the investigation in the Commonwealth Edison, which has implicated Mike Madigan.
Okay. And
the fear is that even though the lesser ranked attorneys in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Illinois would probably keep doing that, would they keep doing it with the same determination as Lausch has shown in the last 4 years, the last couple of years that he's been in charge?
What also would be a signal, if you pulled him out, that you want them to go lighter on Commonwealth Edison?
That's one way to look at it, yes.
Yeah. You guys, you and I are both Southsiders. That's the only way to look at it. his top three cases that he really is pushing forward, you want to kill him, right? Am I wrong?
Yeah, although he's not involved in the daily investigation of those cases, but he's the driving force to say, keep working on it. He can assign the attorneys to keep working on it. A new U.S. attorney could say, Chief and Maddie, you're no longer working on the Commonwealth Edison case. You're going to go over to the dog catcher case over here, which is just as important, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, how they go about this stuff and who chooses what they go after. And I have serious problems with how they go after crime and what they've done. Mm-hmm. And I really don't like the idea that in the banking system that they've essentially taken a total hands-off on any kind of wire fraud. And I won't say total, even though I did, for any kind of wire fraud or any of that kind of stuff, and they basically put it all back on the banks. They said, mm-hmm. You're the enforcement piece of this, and we're not giving you any help. By the way, if you screw up, you know,
we're coming after you.
To the normal citizen, it's the equivalent of somebody steals a car out of your garage and you show up and you get written up a ticket for not having the deadbolt that the law says you need to have. It's your fault your car got stolen. I mean, and I don't think I don't think the citizenry has any idea of how much of that's going on and how much my mind really sucks, but that's another story. But I,
well, that's a completely different issue from what they're doing with the U.S. attorneys. And to answer your first question, yes, it is typical for a new president to come in and ask for the resignation and replace most of them. But it's not uncommon for a president to keep some in place, even if they're from the opposition party.
Well, I mean, I think, well, you and I, even if we like the guy, first of all, if somebody ever came down from space and dropped me in the Oval Office, you'd be my first guy that I'd say, okay, how do I do all this stuff? Because I have no idea. But I had real issues with Fitzgerald regarding Blagojevich. Not that he, not that he prosecuted the case. I mean, whatever, he had more information than I did. But from what I heard anecdotally by the people, he used to come by series, is that out of all the people he had working in his office, some incredible amount of the, I'll say, available man hours of his whole place were being put on the Blagojevich thing, to the detriment of bank robberies and all the other stuff that they're charged with. I would not have approved of that amount of personnel. It wasn't that important to me, whether or not he tried to get money for a case, and he never even did. I mean, he was a knucklehead, but he was such a bad one. He didn't even, you know, it's like the Keystone cops went out to rob a gas station and they get a flat tire on the way. Can you still get them for robbing a gas station? I mean, whatever.
Well, we have a disagreement about that because I think the damage that Blagojevich did while he was governor warranted that kind of investigative power to get him out of office. That, because that goes back to the same issue that you were talking about a little while ago about the way that ComEd or lobbyists of big corporations get into the state legislature. What Blagojevich did was continue that on steroids. It was an appropriation of what he did on steroids. So I think that high use of manpower was warranted in that case.
But I mean, but you're always you're charged with that's one of the things I have going on with the law here, Brennan. Is everybody comes in and now there's a bazillion rules and laws, and everybody almost gets to pick the ones they want that they're going to enforce and who they're going after, to the point where it's so uneven, it's almost like you don't have laws. But I think we're almost reached that point.
Well, there's a state, you're right. I mean, there's a number of things that a lot more people could be charged with, a lot more things by laws, and a lot of the laws are unfair and stupid. But when you're in an office like the U.S. Attorney's Office, you've got to prioritize what you're going after. So, like in your example, was Fitzgerald going after corruption at the government level? The governor's level, or was he focusing on the bank robberies that you mentioned?
Well, real quick,
he chose to go after political corruption.
Well, we'll real quick, because we got a dash, Brennan, but we'll talk about it next week because you and I will disagree on this a little bit. It's not lost on Peter Fitzgerald that Jim Thompson put Otto Koerner in jail and became governor. It's not lost on this guy that Dan Webb put Ryan in jail and became like the highest priced attorney in the country. I mean, it's not lost on these guys. If you put an Illinois governor in jail, you write your ticket. I mean, right?
Fair enough. But Peter Fitzgerald never ran for public office.
No. He's probably the straightest of the three. Anyway, thank you, Brennan. SP Futures down 13.5. They're coming back some. NASDAQ Futures down 178. We were actually lower than that. Come back with Mr. Joel Unkonen.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Just Brent Weber on the board. S&P futures down 18 now, and NASDAQ futures down 202. We just dropped during break here from 13 to 18. So that was a... Some little piece of news came flying out here. We got the Dow's actually like unchanged, even though because we got some Boeing is up 187. Not sure how engines coming apart is a positive for a company, but I guess it is. We got Chevron Texaco up 118. We got Goldman Sachs up 160. But we've got Microsoft down again, down $4, which is interesting. Microsoft and Apple are getting clobbered here. Apple's down another 255 today. We'll get some words out of that on Joel here in a second. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 139. That's a full 1%. FTSE only down 16, though. That's 0.2%. CAC around down 1. Let's call that one flat. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei up 138. That's 0.5%. Shanghai down 6. Call that flat. Hang Seng up 312. That's a full 1%. So they're going the other way. Just in a way of review, yesterday, Dow was up 27. On a big day on American Express was up. They had Caterpillar up. They kind of carried the Dow. S&P was down 30, however, which is 0.8%. NASDAQ was down 341, which is a full 2.5%. So it was a huge down day in the NASDAQ yesterday. So if you just look at the Dow number, it's not giving you a flavor on the day. 10-year, 1.36. That's actually down a little bit. The Bund, minus 0.30. Japan, positive 0.11. So they're pretty much the same. Oil, up 38 cents, 62.08. Brent, up 33 cents, 65.57. I think... Well, West Texas had dropped below 60 on Friday, and it came flying right back. Natural gas down 4 cents, 291. So as of now, the sell spot there was like 312 when it got to. RBOB unchanged to 184. Gold with a big day yesterday is up another $1.20 today. 1809 back up over 1800, obviously. Silver down 4 cents, 2804, but it's up over 28, which hasn't been in a while. Copper unchanged at 414. Wow, on the copper. Platinum down 12, 1269. Our crypto report. Bitcoin down $7,700, $46,343, so down really, like what, almost 10 or 11 in a couple of days, Matty. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have an issue on the outbound Kennedy, a crash that's been moved to the right shoulder at Nagel Avenue on the outbound side, and that's causing a bit of a slowdown as folks navigate around that. Not affecting the inbound side as of yet. Eden's looking good, too. Eisenhower and Stevenson, normal traffic volumes, no delays to speak of. Southside Expressways, we have a crash, actually a disabled vehicle, on the outbound Bishop Ford. That's just before Steel Bridge. The disabled vehicle is blocking the left lane. A semi apparently has lost its trailer. That would be scary if you were behind that. The Dan Ryan to 8094 is up to 14 minutes on the Bishop Ford, but traffic is starting to build as crews are getting that semi out of the way that's blocking the left lane. Everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be a very nice winter day today. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 40. We'll melt a lot of this snow today, which is great. Right now it is clear and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, a beautiful day. Partly cloudy skies with a high of 80. Right now it's clear and 45. In sports, Chief, if the playoffs started today, somehow the Bulls would be in as the eighth seed. They've won 4 out of 5 and are playing good ball after blowing out Houston on the road last night, 120-100. Suns took care of the Blazers, 122-100. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. They're back in action tonight in Columbus, so that's a 6 p.m. Chicago time puck drop. Coyotes top the Ducks, 4-3. Chief.
Have you even watched one of the Canadian teams play? I haven't.
In hockey?
Yeah.
I haven't watched any hockey.
Oh, I thought you watched some of the Hawks.
I guess maybe I've watched one or two Blackhawks games of the season. But, yeah, are the Canadian teams in the U.S. or are they in Canada?
Oh, hence, they're not coming to the U.S. at all. That's why
they're just playing each other.
Yeah, they're totally playing each other.
I was going to say, it seems like we play Columbus every other day.
Yeah, well, we're playing everybody in our division. I don't even think we're going west.
Yeah.
It's really weird. Joel, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing okay. Your market is flummoxing here a little bit. It's interesting. The interesting moves within the sectors.
We had
gold going flying down. Now it's flying back up some. The bonds. I've stayed steady on the bonds. I've been short bonds really now for my people for maybe a better part of 6 weeks and not big, but done some spreads that have worked out okay. I think we're going to keep going there. Who knows? I mean, I've been 10 years early on this one, Joel, so you can't really, so it's not exactly, I'm not the guy to listen to, but, I think Powell's testimony today is going to be interesting because he's got inflation breaking out all over the place and he's going to say there isn't. Some of these congressmen are going to say, what are you talking about? And, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, you addressed a lot of things there. First and foremost, I mean, you saw the day caps breaking down. And I mean, this is not like the last few days or the last few weeks. Apple hit its all-time high just the day before earnings. Now it's 20-some bucks off that level. Microsoft wasn't treated well after earnings. Either was Amazon. And the last part of the rally was all these small caps, was all this fluff. And that doesn't move, to me, unless you have the big boys moving, it's not a solid rally, a solid foundation. And now these small caps and these stocks are coming unraveled, and the big cap stocks are going down too. So, we've definitely hit an intermediary top here, last Monday. How far this decline will take us, it remains to be seen. If you think about it though, we're not even at our February low.
No.
We're not even at our February low. So, man, there could be considerable more downside here in this market, even at 3,800. But the other thing is that kind of like the reopening trade, right? Everyone, we were in lockdown. We were, things are progressing with the vaccine. But, how you have the sell the news trade? It almost feels like the reopening of the economy is like sell the news. You had all the expectation for it. I mean, the airlines are taking off now, and the cruise lines are. So I guess it wouldn't relate to that. But it seemed like the big tech, the stuff that ran up and led us in the rally for most of last year, seems like sell the news on it.
Well, there's no. I mean, it's not like there isn't anybody that does this. I'm sure there is, but I was, obviously yesterday the cruise lines were to the moon, Alice, right? And I don't. Then they had a couple guys on there talking about how on the talk shows, the talking head shows, and they're saying that the bookings are up over last year and blah blah blah, and you pile and say, cruise line X, okay, I'll pay $50 for it. Does anybody have any idea after a year of not being in business of carrying that kind of inventory of ships and maintenance and things? Does anybody any idea what that balance sheet of those places looks like? And does anybody care?
I made the remark in my afternoon show. I think RCL added like what? $8 yesterday.
Yeah.
And they lost $5. They should have lost $10, and then they would have been up 16 points. I totally agree with you. I don't understand it. I'm not investing in those stocks. But big day up on volume. They're looking like for pent up demand here, and I don't know. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of cruises before the pandemic, except of course the cruise to Alaska that I took. So I don't understand it.
Well, I mean,
I wish I could explain it to you better than that, but I don't know what.
Well, it's
the
all
hell
hype. It's
are thinking with
it's the stocks. Same people that are buying into stocks that are 20 times revenue, 20 times earnings. I can get. I mean, if you think that Caterpillar or Deer, one of those places, is worth 20 times earnings, you might be right, because they might have pricing power. They could raise their prices 20%, and where else are you going to go? They're somewhat, you know, I won't say monopolies, but they're they're oligopolies for sure. I mean, there's no doubt about any of that stuff. You could conceivably see them grow into it, but I would have to know, these guys got to be down, these cruise people, how many billions of dollars? Now, if they went out and borrowed money for 30 years at 2%, okay, God love them. They'll probably be able to come out of it. But if it's short-term financing, if the interest rates go up to 5, they're going to be paying 5. I don't know, can they afford 5? Can they afford 6? I mean, there's a million questions before I would ever put anybody's money in there. And it could be a good buy. I don't know. But I'm saying, I don't think anybody knows that was buying them yesterday.
No, I mean, you had your opportunities in those, and they were at some bargain prices, and I mean, this is not investment advice, but I'd be selling into that pop. I to let it shake out, a company loses $5 a share, it just makes absolutely no sense to me, Chief. But, you know, this is the kind of market environment that we're in. The SPACs, speculation, these small caps, short squeezes, you know, it's hard to understand this market, and you just have to look at your investment objectives and see where you're at on things, and, you know, take your profits when you can, because, you see these things going up, and you're like, I'm never selling, blue skies ahead, but, and you know, being a on the floor and stuff, it's a lot easier to sell, you're getting your offer and lifting on the way up, as to sell on the way down, and as hard as it is, you have to do it.
Joel, you're showing your age, buddy, like me. The idea of the greatest sin for the new investor is to buy something at 20, sell it at 100, and watch it trade 102. The tears that are flowing are like no tomorrow. Instead of saying, I just made 80, I should be happy, why am I even looking at it? You'll hear more sniveling about that $2 they missed than the 80 they made.
Yeah, real quick, I know we've got a minute here. Michigan basketball,
yeah, wow.
Chief. Oh, my Lord. Beat Ohio State, Juwan. Going back to old-fashioned basketball.
Yeah.
Jamming in the middle with your big guy. My guy's bigger than you guys. We're going to throw the ball inside, and we're going to jam it down your throat. So, first time we won in Columbus since 2014. You know what the story's been in football. Just a glorious day. I'm just so happy.
They're playing
like
unreal.
Really intense. Yelling at the television.
Are they closing in on Baylor, and who's the number one team?
Baylor Gonzaga. I mean, everyone just thinks that they're the cat's meow, and they're not budging. But the interesting thing is that we are ranked third. Ohio State was ranked fourth.
Yeah, well, who's number one?
The fourth ranked team we beat, and we got like a 4-5 game in the lead in the Big Ten. We do have Luka Garza in Iowa. We got some tough games.
Yep.
We got Iowa coming in Thursday. We still got to play Illinois. We got a gauntlet of games coming up, so it's up and down. But it's been a reprieve for me from 2020, from no Hoops tournament, no Michigan.
I think football. I think they're going to be a number one seed. Anyway,
they're going to be a one seed, Chief. Yep.
Right, take care, unless Illinois beats them. But take care of yourself, bud. We'll talk to you next week.
Go blue.
I think he's a Michigan fan. What do they? SP Futures down 18. Be right back, Kenny Pulcheri.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now,
right now. Money.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber. We have Mr. Kenny Polcari. S&P futures down 1850. NASDAQ futures down 204 after a horrible day yesterday. And I understand that we can invest now in the Kenny Polcari SPAC.
I should only be that lucky. Oh, my God. It's out of control, the SPAC craze, right?
Wait, but as a special purpose acquisition company, basically a publicly traded firm that has no operations, no assets, other than a war chest of cash and just one stated business plan to eventually buy another company. Does that sound like Kenny or not, Manny?
It's unbelievable. And I think the part, it sounds like a gift. And I think the part that a lot of people, either they don't understand it or if they do understand it, they don't really care. But the guy that launches the SPAC right away gets paid. The minute the thing goes public, he gets his percentage right off the top and he walks away. He's got nothing to do with it in terms of its next move, right? The game is very interesting, which is why I think you've seen not only is there a ton of money out there looking for a home, but the pace at which these SPACs are coming to the market are just mind-boggling. I can't even imagine that there's as many companies out there to be bought by these SPACs as there are SPACs. So it's going to be interesting to see. You saw what happened this morning with that.
Yeah, that's what I was looking at.
That's merging now with that electric car company, right? They bought that SPAC up. You know, trading up to $50, and now that the news is out, apparently they don't like the deal, and it's down, 22% or 25% in pre-market trading. So,
yeah, somewhat interesting. It'll be
interesting to see how this all falls out.
I told you a week or so ago that my brother was working with a couple of our clients. You know, they're doing the investing. We don't do that, but he was helping them identify stuff in that area, the electric car, and they're putting together a little bit of a basket with the intention of, if the basket works well, of maybe doing something with it someday. I mean, you have to do it, for a while before you get a track record. I mean, they're not there yet, but it's interesting. Yeah. I mean, at least I'm learning about a lot of these companies. I never knew who the hell they were. The little battery companies here and this kind of stuff there. And there's a lot of knowledge that I've learned from those guys doing their research. It's amazing what you learn from your clients, right? I mean, you can't go after this all yourself. I mean, all the stuff about the Lordstown plant and this pickup and that pickup. And you know what? I'm surprised Kenny's all over some of this stuff. Even the stock doesn't move. And again, do not any investment. Ford is really into this stuff pretty heavy, more so than I think the general public knows. Now, that doesn't mean they're in it for the right price. They're going to make a bundle on it, but they're way more into this electric stuff than people give them credit, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's true, but I think that's going to, as we move through, that's going to become, I think, more and more well known, right? Because I agree with you. I think Ford and General Motors are further along than many people realize, and they're so caught up with, Tesla or these other companies that are, sexy and they're new and they're different. But I think it's going to be an interesting state certainly to be in, and I think there's opportunity right under your nose.
So what do you think would make the thing in Texas worse? Like 30 million cars that only run on electricity?
Well, right now.
Yeah.
Right now, considering they don't have any. I mean, the stories, and here's what I don't understand either. You heard the stories about people receiving electric bills in the tens of thousands of dollars. Like, I'm not sure I even understand how that happens.
We just were talking about that in the first part of the show with Brendan. And he says it's power coming from other places, and they can tell you, they can use the market rate. Well, the market rate for last week, since nobody else had any, was a lot of money, and they sent the bills. It's a little like the Enron fiasco in California was.
Right.
But I don't see how
What happens if you don't pay the $10,000 electric bill? Are they going to shut your electricity off now?
Yeah, who the hell's going to pay it? Who can pay it?
Well, I have no idea who's going to pay it, but certainly the homeowner's not going to pay it.
But it's not, the weird part, your electric goes off for like a week, all your stuff's ruined, it comes back on for a day, and you get a $10,000 bill, I love it. Only in America.
Right.
I'm
not even sure I understand the whole ERCOT thing down in Texas, how they, they were like an island unto themselves, and that the infrastructure there was so specific to Texas. Until this whole disaster happened, I was completely unaware that that's how they managed their grid.
Well, the grid evidently, from what I'm reading, and again, we got to get somebody on who's an expert. The grid was essentially intrastate to a huge extent. I can't believe there's not one line that sneaks across the border anywhere, but evidently there isn't, and they left the. They kind of left like the specs for the grid and stuff up to different people, but different areas of the state had different specs. So, and evidently the western part of Texas is doing a hell of a lot better than the eastern part because they were on some of the different, and somehow or another they don't all talk to each other all that well anywhere. Kenny.
Well, there's a whole other issue.
Yeah.
But, to be fair, I don't think, and I'm not saying it's necessarily right, but to be fair, the weather that hit Texas last week, is once in a 100-year event, right? I mean, whoever expected that kind of an event to hit them, and so now it's going to cause a whole new reevaluation of how to prepare and how to manage the process, because sometimes you get hit out of left field, you didn't expect it, and look what happened.
Well, Kenny, we've been talking about it a lot of the week, but from my work at Pullman and how the engineers go about something. There's a bunch of different questions. Was the design good enough for the weather? The answer is probably not for that storm. But then like you said, it's probably a 100-year storm. And the question is, should it be beefed up? Probably. But was the design, as of 2 weeks ago, anywhere near the practical state of the grid and the stuff? Now, Carl brought in last Friday about how the gas lines. The pumping, you have to keep pushing the stuff along, right? This doesn't move on itself. They used to have these essentially spots where you would leak gas off the gas line, and the pump was powered by the gas in the line.
Right.
But then they decided, oh, no, we don't want that. That's not carbon fuel positive or something. So they went to electric pumps. Well, the electric pumps went out, all the gas in the line stopped. And once the gas in the line stops, there's still enough water and gas where you could have freezing in a line, even though it's a gas line. And that's what happened. So, now the question is, how much was it allowed to degrade? And I gave a story about Chicago when they built the CBOE. You'll be interested in this. The Commonwealth Edison was like, on a scale of 1 to 10, was like a 10. That's why people moved to Chicago, because the power you could count on. In the CBOE building had two feeds, one from Pilsen and one from downtown, the other way. So if one whole grid went out, they could duplicate from another grid. Yet, 10 years later, they said that the Commonwealth Edison was allowed to degrade so much that they essentially put a generator, they put essentially a friggin' locomotive on the roof, Kenny. And when I lifted it up there. And then 10 years after that, when I was still on the board, on a bad day for air conditioning, like a real hot day, Commonwealth Edison would call the CBO and say, would you please turn your generator on? That's how much it was allowed to degrade here in 25 years. Now, I'm going to say that the Texas system, the design probably wasn't good enough, and I'll bet it was 75% of the design in the day it went down. I don't think it was anywhere near the design capability. That's just my guess.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think that's true. But look what happened. Right?
Yeah.
So just what wasn't prepared at all.
But I mean, so,
there's going to be a lot of discussion about that for sure. And somebody, there'll be heads to roll, I can imagine.
But I mean, if you're in El Paso and you got ice on your power lines, why would you ever design your power lines to withstand ice in El Paso?
What I mean. Yeah. So they weren't, so to be fair, it's a once in a 100-year event that happened. So, they didn't design it that way. Exactly right. But now, they're blaming it. You see right away, they all come out and say, climate change, and we have to be aware of climate change, and it's because climate change, it just happened. And so, whether it's climate change or whether it's that 100-year event, the fact is, you have to design it for the worst possible event you can imagine.
Well, no matter how much you talk about climate change, and I'm probably on that side that you don't just pour nothing but carbon dioxide into the air and expect nothing to change, but I mean, every single thing that happens in Chicago, you can damn near always find a record from 100 years ago that's almost as bad.
Right.
I mean, it's not like when we talk about, a polar vortex, they'll say it's as cold as it's been since 1880. Well, okay, at least there was one other time, and it might be a 150-year event, but it's not unprecedented.
Right, well, that's exactly what I mean. So it's not necessarily unprecedented, and so it is whether it's a century event or whether it's a 50-year event, whatever it is, there is precedent for that, right? There is history on that. And so I suppose what Texas learned is that they have to be prepared for the 100-year event.
Well, when they start talking,
I think the whole country recognizes that you have to be prepared for events that, that happen only at century marks, I would imagine.
But how do you? You guys in Boston, from my railroad knowledge, there was a huge storm you guys had up there, and I'm going to say 72 or something. And they ended up all the rail lines, nothing could run. So you guys, like you wrote the check, Eddie. You went out and bought this thing they bought that you could put on the front of a locomotive. They would essentially go along, take the snow, pour it into a car on the train. They had a massive fire in there, melt the snow and pour it out on the side of the tracks. This thing cost, at the time it cost like $500,000 or something, which was huge money back then. In something like 7 or 8 years, they scrapped it because it was all rusty. They never used it. So you got to be careful you don't overkill yourself either.
Well, I agree, but that's the line, right? Where do you draw the line? And so you know wherever you draw the line, it's going to be the...
Oh, sure.
You're never going to have it in the right place.
But, I mean, Chicago needs 200 plow and salt trucks. They probably don't need 800.
Right.
But yet there'll be a storm someday where you wish you had 800, right?
Right, right.
And you just have to... You got to do what's right, and whatever the criticism is, you got to bend over and take it, basically, right? I mean, somebody's going to criticize you no matter what, right, Kenny? I mean, you're going to hit four home runs, and they're going to say, that Kenny struck out his fifth time up, and they're not going to be happy. I mean, that's right.
Right. You're only as good as your last trade.
Or your last at bat. real quick, what do you think of this market? Does interest rates, why do you think the implied volatility is going out every single week for the next 6 months?
So I think it is exactly what I've been saying for a while. I think that the market was failing to recognize the inflation and the interest rate picture that was bubbling underneath the surface, and now suddenly it's rearing its head, and that all the good news that we know, right? So we know the good news about the vaccine. We know the good news about the relief package. We know what they want to do about infrastructure. So what else are investors going to do? They're going to have to reprice now based on rising rates and the potential rising inflation rate. I'm not necessarily surprised. I'm just surprised it took this long. I thought it was going to happen sooner than now. But I actually want to see them shake the branches. I want to see the market come under a little bit of pressure. I want to see who falls out of the tree and get the opportunity to take some of this fluff out and bring us back to, what might be a more relevant, normal range based on what we know, right, in terms of where rates are and where the line in the sand is. I think above 1.5%, market's going to really pause. I think at 2%, There's going to be a real repricing, but you can already see it at 1.375, 1.4%. The market, look what they did yesterday to tech, and look what they're doing again today.
Yeah.
NASDAQ's down another 200 points because investors are saying, I still like tech. I just don't want to pay the prices that I paid 2 weeks ago because now I think they're not worth as much. And so it's exactly what should happen. And I think the broader market might take a little bit of a haircut,
but
not nearly as much as the growth things are. And we've talked about that. And I think it's all due to now the future of, what are people think rates and inflation going to do.
How rough are, one word answer, how rough are these guys going to be on Powell today and tomorrow?
I don't think they're going to be rough on Powell at all, because I think he's going to say exactly what he's been saying all along. He's going to tell them they need to pass massive stimulus. He's going to tell them they need to pass a big infrastructure plan, and he's going to assure them that he's keeping rates at zero and that he has it all in control. So I don't think they're going to be tough on.
Somebody might say, no inflation, are you blind, sir? They might do that.
Well, they might do that, but I'm not even sure that they understand it enough to ask that question.
Maybe. Kenny, thank you very much, buddy. Have a good week. Talk to you next week. SP Futures down on 17. We're hanging in there. A very short break. Limits with Jeff Joseph.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Blowing up by Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Brett Weber on the board. SP Futures down 18. NASDAQ Futures down 214. Except for being down over 300 yesterday. So the big NASDAQ is getting the big whack. And Apple's down another 279 today. And Microsoft is down 450. So the stuff that's been carrying us up, Amazon down 55. And like we said the other day, I forget her name, a lady was saying on TV that the huge speculation is now at the farthest end of the curve. Bitcoin and some of the rest of stuff, but Bitcoin's down 7,000 today. That's okay. Jeff sold his at 56,000, I believe, yesterday at the top.
Don't remind me, at 1,000.
He sold his at the tippy top, and he's got the little thing to prove it. He's framing it as we speak. It's out to the professional framers. Jeff, how are you, buddy?
All right. But not sitting on a lot in Bitcoin, that's for sure.
I hear you have your own SPAC.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. That's what Luckbox is focused on for our next issue. We're going to print with our issue on outer space and aliens this week. So that's been a labor of love. We've enjoyed working on that for the past couple weeks, but that is wrapping up shortly. And next up is SPACs. Hey, when Colin Kaepernick has a SPAC, you can't turn away, right?
Did you take my idea from years ago? I think you did. I said if somebody lands on the saucer lands on the White House lawn, like on the day the Earth stood still, CNBC and Fox is going to need an expert on our extraterrestrial people. Are you going to be the guy?
Well, we found the guys, and there's quite a bit of them out there.
How do you become an expert?
You know, it's an interesting landscape of everything from former astronauts to like alien nuts.
Wow.
There's a whole range of people that have been looking at space and making predictions about what's actually out there. The most notable is this guy, Avi Loeb. He wrote a book recently about Oumuamua, and he is the head of the Black Hole Initiative at Harvard. He's a Harvard astrophysicist, highly, highly regarded among his peers. we spent some real time with him, and he's convinced that in 2017 we were visited by an alien craft, and makes a pretty compelling case for it. So we dissect that and get some counter opinions, and it's going to be a fun issue.
Well, they were on TV at the Irish Central Florida game when in the lightning delay. They were looking up at the sky at the lightning. You can see all this stuff flying in the lightning bolts. You ever saw that?
There's so many instances. Yeah. The CIA and the Pentagon just dropped several million documents, or pages, I should say, of information that they've been holding back for years. We went through a lot of it and can't say that there's anything that's particularly conclusive of what they decide to share. But there is a lot of research going on metals that have been found, orbital debris. That's something we look at very closely, too.
Really? Okay.
Is the degree to which orbital debris is a problem now. There's over 900,000 pieces of man-made junk flying around in space now, and they're starting to run into each other at a low frequency, but there have been some collisions. And that creates potential concern for satellites and GPS. And then you have Starlink, of course, SpaceX's newest initiative that has just sent a payload of 140 satellites up into space at $1 million apiece. It was not a bad deal for them. It was kind of like a ride sharing for satellites.
Okay.
And other satellite companies paid to have their satellites ejected out there. But all these things are just flying around, and there is actually a mission control for junk. You know, keeps an eye on where things are and looking for things colliding. But it's a big, interesting world out there.
I thought at some point,
it'll be a fun issue. And it's free, always. GetLuckBox.com. You can pick up the next issue that easy.
Is there some height that you put something? I'm asking you because I know you know. I thought the stuff that's in orbits we used to use, years and years ago, eventually degraded and come down, like the original space station did. I mean, but there's some height you can get up there where it stays there forever and doesn't come down?
Well, beyond outside of the Earth's orbit and gravitational pull, yes.
But, I mean, stuff that you're talking about from years ago, doesn't that eventually degrade and fall in?
I am not certain. I think once something is outside of the Earth's orbit,
okay,
it will not return.
Well, you remember the big flash in the sky when the yes. original space station yep. came in. I think it was so yep. big in it.
Absolutely.
So if what's the speculation? If everybody shows up to check us out, they find us so disgusting, they just leave and say, come back another 20 years, see if they got any better or what?
Well, the problem and the theoretical discussions of extraterrestrials and sentient life really revolve around, it's mathematics. There's something called the Drake equation, and we take a good look at that. The Drake equation's been well regarded for a long time because it was more theoretical in some instances. The Drake equation basically is a framework, a mathematical framework, that allows you to estimate or come up with a number of how many sentient civilizations may exist outside of our planet. And recently, two astrophysicists who are also academics over at the University of London, Consolis and Webb are their names, they applied new data to the Drake equation and came to the conclusion that there's most likely around 36 other civilizations. That was their hard number. It was actually a range. They don't like the fact that people reduce it down to the number that represent the mean of their calculation. But they thought 36 was the mean number. The problem is these 36 civilizations or existence of extraterrestrial life are so far away that in our lifetime we're not likely to run into any one of them. So that's, so much of this is mathematics and theoretics combined, which, it's an interesting exercise. There's mathematical evaluation, but then you still have to deal with the theoretical probability of actually intercepting this type of life form. So there's a growing consensus among everybody in the... We speak to the former head of NASA, who also believes that there's life out there. And that's becoming pretty common, but at the same time, the probability that we'll make contact is still considered to be pretty low.
Well, I have to believe that it's only humans could be so arrogant as to think this entire universe is there just for us.
And that's right.
It's a pretty big place. I mean,
yeah, right.
Because, of course, forever is forever. I mean, it's hard to imagine anything outside of the universe. I mean, if you try and think that way, you almost go squirrely. You almost need a drink, right? There can't be an end, because what's on the other side of the end?
We've done a lot of fun things at Luckbox and, gone down some deep rabbit holes, and each one has been a learning experience for our editorial team, because each issue is essentially a deep dive. This has been the most enlightening. It's just been an interesting process. We spoke with Terry Virts. He's an astronaut who's been in space for 240 days. Also took some brilliant, brilliant photography that he gave us the right to republish. And he had some really interesting insights. One of which I was surprised about is how complimentary that most of the people that came out of NASA, former astronauts, astrophysicists, they're all really, really thrilled about the last administration's new initiative about Space Force. They thought it was long overdue. They thought if it wasn't for...
Who handled it before, Jeff?
The political, challenges that the last administration has as being the messenger of that news, that it should have been much more well-received, and that two things are essential. Our today's military needs two new dimensions. One of them is space, and one of them is cybersecurity. And they were overwhelmingly supportive, and yet at the same point disappointed about the lack of public enthusiasm.
Well, Jeff, how long did it take for the
recognizing the necessity of those moves?
How long did it take before the Air Force was broken away from the Army? I mean, it's bureaucratic inertia, right?
I was
never a fan of the man before, during, or after Trump. The simple fact is, there are three or four or five things that I can name that were tremendous accomplishments that somebody should be getting credit for, and whether it's him or somebody under him or whatever. Anybody doesn't think that this plan to get people to make these vaccines before they were approved isn't helping us tremendously is out of his mind. I mean, this was a tremendous idea, and it cost...
Well, considering, that's such a good point. When you consider the government bureaucracy that goes into FDA trials and approval, I've been involved as an investor in fact, more than anything in my prior venture capital work, I'd been involved in four early stage biomedical companies and had to go through, of which one successfully emerged, which is nice, and of course three didn't, but the odds are typically that only 8% ever come out of a phase three trial. The FDA trials have made it just so impossible to bring new drugs to market. It's so long and such an expensive process, and the fact that was completely upended for this global emergency was an incredible story. And yes, it didn't get the attention or respect that it should have, but it is probably, you just nailed it. That's the single biggest accomplishment of the last administration, without any question.
I think right up there is the stuff that Pompeo accomplished in the Middle East in the last year.
Sure, yeah, it would have been nicer to see another, a larger company, someone like Saudi, sign on. But those were, and they were about to, they were close. But those were, those were big moves.
Well, part of it is, Trump's own fault. He was tripping over his feet so much, he didn't have a chance to get his own accomplishments out there. But then again, nobody wanted to hear him either.
I couldn't think of a worse spokesman for any accomplishment. Yeah. I mean,
but I mean, when you look at when this first happened, and I read, I don't know, were you on that day when somebody sent me, one of the listeners, and whoever it was, I thank you very much, the list of the seven companies and how they got money. The whole idea was they wanted seven people going after these vaccines. Anybody really wanted in that was big enough. I don't know if somebody got shortchanged, could have. The world is of politics. If you're not big, you don't get anywhere. But they essentially, the people that needed a development money, they gave it to them. and those people got less per shot, right? And if you didn't, that's why when Pfizer says they didn't take any money, that's total BS. They had the contract, and they're getting more per shot than other people because they said we'll do the development on our own. So they're getting like $7 more per shot. But anybody ever thought in this day and age that you would sign a contract with these people to where we're getting these shots for less than $20 a shot? Some as low as 12 or 13 in this day and age. I mean, that's why Pfizer. Everybody goes, how come Pfizer's not going up? Because they're not making any. They're making a little bit of money at it, but they're not making that much money at it. They're a $52 billion company. This is $1.5 billion or two. You know, it's 1/25 of their revenue. So I mean, that was a tremendous idea. And with all the other money,
Farmer Bro must be shaking in his cell right now.
Oh, God, yeah. But I mean, so what is who used to handle space stuff before? Was it the Air Force? Was it just anybody who happened to be involved?
Well, it was NASA, you know, for the most part. But you know, there really wasn't a focus on military, you know, movement in space. The Air Force handled that, and NASA was an advisor.
So if you wanted, if you thought there was a, you know, something warlike, if you, man, what a stupid term that is, something warlike going on in the Everglades, who did you call to say, move the satellite over so we can look at the Everglades? Was that the Air Force had to move it, or was that NASA? I mean, or did it?
I would guess. I can't say for certain. In fact, I think the best question to answer there would be with Reagan's Star Wars program, who really ran that program? You know, the missile defense systems. I wondered, that had to be an Air Force program, I would think.
We had it.
I don't know.
At Notre Dame, Jeff, they had this class, Space Tech and Society. It was designed for aerospace people. Of course, everybody caught wind of it being an easy class, so all of a sudden everybody goes, right? They had a couple of guys that used to run NASA that were speakers. They'd come in for the speakers were broken up. It was a full semester, but somebody'd lecture for like a month, and another guy came in and he'd talk. I never met more likable, more intelligent people than those four or five guys. I thought they were spectacular. I went to every single class. There's supposed to be 250 people in class. 30 showed up. I was there every class. I learned more on that thing that I use today, all about the DC-10 and the cargo door and what the shuttle was supposed to look like. I learned it all in that class. Nobody else even went. I don't know why. I thought it was fascinating. Dr. Nicolades was...
The editors, the whole team sensed a joyous kind of receptive attitude that they had to just speaking to people who had a sincere interest about their topic. They were so giving and so available and for follow-up questions and the like, and that's predominantly the people that came from NASA. They just like that. You know, this is kind of their moment, right? You think with what's going on with Blue Origin and SpaceX and Virgin Galactic in terms of, you know, the private commercialization efforts of space. And then with, you know, back on February 18th, only a couple days ago, the Mars Perseverance rover landed after, you know, six months heading out there to land on Mars, you know, some 40 million miles away. And I don't know if you've seen the extraordinary pictures that came from the landing of Perseverance on Mars just only 3 or 4 days ago. But you can go to the NASA site and see all that. And this is the moment for space. And then Space Force, you know, that was a big thing. So the last 2 years have really been exciting for those people that are in. There's a lot of jobs to be had. There's more money. Trump expanded some of the budgeting for NASA at the same time over the last couple of years. This is a really good time for space exploration, and there's a lot of optimism about what the future holds.
Well, Jeff, I think you and I are on the same wavelength. And one of my psychology Dr. Mark, who's I think just in the process of retiring, there is so much about work is accomplishment. And when you we've got people sitting home all day sending emails, nasty emails back and forth to people. God, what does that do to your brain? I mean, I know it. At Pullman, when guys would see these old Carnackers, they'd see pieces of metal showing up and guys starting stamping and drilling holes. And 6 months later, this gorgeous railroad car rolls out the door. These guys, it was like somebody dropped four boxes of Viagra on them before there was a Viagra. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine the feeling of those guys? First of all, nobody around here, I mean, I'm not going to pin anything on millennials or anything, but has any idea of the bazillions of tasks, and that's a word, a Googleplex of tasks have to go in to land something on Mars. And when you pull that off, those guys got to be pulling a cork out of some bottle somewhere. I mean, only they know how hard it was to do, and they pulled it off. It's like building.
It's true, and you could see that enthusiasm on the NASA site and others right now when the Perseverance landed back on February 18th. We've seen this over and over in, you know, Hollywood's depiction of what mission control looks like.
Yeah.
But when you saw all those engineers rise in unison and scream and clap and shout, you could actually see the culmination of years of efforts and that satisfaction that they genuinely had. It was really, really fun to watch. Plus, there are some great stories that came out of the recent landing. You may have seen on television just a couple days ago, a young African-American Chicago girl was doing an internship, and she was given the responsibility of kind of the mathematic distance
to make sure that
she was profiled. It was really a wonderful story. So there's a lot of careers to be had going forward in this.
These
and,
people used to sit in their slide
roll.
You know,
the money's there now when you have Bezos and Branson and Musk, you know, funding these businesses. Plus, not to mention, you know, Starlink looks to be a profitable business.
Yeah.
You know, the recent, and Starlink, of course, is the global internet satellite initiative of SpaceX. You wonder, you know, SpaceX and Musk throwing, you know, millions of dollars, billions of dollars into outer space, you know, what's that for? But remember, there's a commercial interest there as well. Starlink is expected to be 100% faster than any land-based modems. So if you're getting Comcast cable at your home, they expect to double speed by, or increase speed by at least 100%, more likely 130%, 140%. They're coming in high with about a $100 disk or hardware to buy and then $100 a month, but guaranteed no downtime because of the global satellite mesh network they're building. And already in a recent survey, 50% of people surveyed said that they'll be paying $100 a month for the certainty of you know, internet that never goes down.
What about the snow and the ice?
At twice the speed, right, yeah. So hey, it's a, you know, and that's soon. This is very soon. Starlink just launched, you know, many, many satellites, including some that weren't theirs, and it's getting closer and closer to rollout. In fact, we sponsored a question with the Good Judgment Project, which kind of came out of our last issue of Luckbox, which was all about the art and science of prediction. And there's a group called the Good Judgment Open and the Good Judgment Project, and this is the 300 super forecasters that have been identified globally that have extremely prescient forecasting skills. They're not crystal ball gazers. They're people who have mathematic abilities and processes that make them better at forecasting than even our intelligence, American intelligence departments. And there's a question about the probability of when Starlink will be operational. That's on their website as well, and we're working with them around that too. So kind of mixing these two subjects together about prediction and forecasting in outer space and some of the, you know, fun things that we're doing.
Well, Jeff,
I think you're not keeping these topics in a silo, but trying to figure out how they could interrelate.
But you're walking proof of your own point. When you come, you're always good when you come in. When you come in and you talk about your next issue, it's like you just had a baby. I mean, this is something you're always proud of, and you can tell it in your voice, for God's sake.
It's interesting. You know, what it has been for us is just an opportunity to learn things that we don't know about. Every issue is focused on a theme of, you know, usually 12,000 to 15,000 words with 6 or 7 stories coming at that one topic from different perspectives, and we always have opposing viewpoints. And it's quite an education. And, you know, it was in the magazine business, you really can't be in the news business because you can't compete with digital platforms, nor should you. But you can be either highly educational or very provocative or very forward-looking. And that's where we focus our efforts, you know, by trying to create evergreen content that if people want to understand robotics or artificial intelligence or IQ, or you know, politics, whatever it is, there's one resource that is a full issue that can give them a complete guide that's going to be as relevant today as it is a year or two from now, and that's really the only formula you can use to stay alive and competitive and relevant in the publishing business.
Well, I think we need, we've had, Jean Morbido, she's a, does the, director of engineering, or director of admission for engineering at Michigan. And she spirits a program in Detroit where all these kids from the inner city schools get involved in robotics. And they have contests, and the one was you had to make a robot that can wing a frisbee. Well, I can't even wing a frisbee, so that's a pretty interesting robot. And everybody gets their big pile of stuff that's donated. And she says these kids, a bunch of them have gone to Michigan Engineering, graduated. I mean, I think that people have to learn, every kid. I mean, in my area, you did. I mean, at least even simple stuff. I mean, if we were to find kids from, you know, bad neighborhoods, and in the summer, let's go out to the forest preserve. Let's take a four-acre spot, clean the thing out, plant new trees, look at the difference in oxygen generated, and say, look at guys and girls, this is what it looked like before you got here. This is what it looked like afterward. Look what you guys and girls did. There's some of that all over the place. We're losing that, Jeff. We're losing that. Because even
you see some of it, and Matt, you're always good with this. I'm blanking right now for not a good reason because I watch it almost, well, I watch it every week. What's that show with the, you know, with like the MIT teams competing with robots? It's like Robot Wars or something.
Something,
you know what
like
I'm referring
the,
to?
Yeah, let me find it. I know what you're talking about.
So that's, you know, that's awesome. I mean, and you speak about the enthusiasm that the people over at NASA have. You see the same thing watching this show. First of all, they're people of all ages. You can tell that they're, you know, they're predominantly engineers and how they approach this, but it's just a fascinating show to watch. You know, they're operating within parameters. They have to build a robot to go into battle bots.
Okay, I've heard that. I have heard of that and watched it.
Yeah, you have to watch it. It's actually really fun to watch because they all come up with different takes to how to create a robot that's going to, you know, go into a ring and emerge a victor against another robot that has the same constraints, you know, both in size and weight and the type of weaponry it uses and the type of heat it generates. And so it's a really fascinating show. Plus, these are really, really bright people out there.
How many movies have we had with Our Robots versus Your
Robots to go into battle?
We get a lot of movies like that. You know, we just found the movies, Our Robots versus Your Robots. Star Wars, you know.
But this is real. It's fun. It's
hey,
really impressive to watch.
When we come back to break, and we have to shift over to you always have a different view, an interesting view of the market and Paul's testimony and what's going on and why we're having the thing. I talked a lot with Mike now for a couple of weeks. I don't know if you've listened in, but he's our expert on the VIX. We're having real trouble figuring out why without any election in the future. Well, there's going to be an election, but not anything close. And Biden appears to be getting, who knows, but the approval ratings, but seems so good so far. The COVID seems to be doing all right in terms of we're making some progress. Why is everybody so afraid with this volatility going up as we go out, Jeff? I mean, we'll talk more about that after break, but I mean, let's go to break right now, and then we'll talk about when we come back, because I don't understand it. I mean, unless it's interest rate related or something, usually there's some... Well, in my spot as a host, you're always supposed to say, you know, market's up because Matty Weber came out of the can with a grimace on his face. But there's always some stupid reason you're supposed to land out there. I can't even think of one. I'll be honest with you. S&P futures down 18.50, NASDAQ futures down again hard, down 220. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Lord North Bay, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley, just Matt Weber on the board. SP futures down 1975. NASDAQ futures down 239. The Dow, however, is actually up like 16 points. Reason for that is we got Triple M up, we got American Express up, we've got Boeing up. We don't exactly know why Boeing's up with the planes being grounded again. Caterpillar up, Chevron up. We do have Home Depot down 6. They just came out with earnings. We'll get those earnings for you in a second. But they got into a spread there. I was thinking, I thought they'd come out bullish, but I didn't get my spread. Good. Microsoft down 441. They've been taking a hit virtually every day. Apple the same way. Apple's down from a 145 and change uptick, top tick, to 122.81. So really talking $23, so 15% off its high. It's kind of a lot for Apple. Around the rest of the world, we've got over in, we got DAX down 141. That's a full 1%. FTSE down 11, that's 0.2%, so not very much. Heck, around down a whole 11 cents. So they're not selling off at all, so they're unchanged. In Asia, we've got the Nikkei actually up 138, that's 0.5%. Shanghai down 6.2%. Hang Seng up 312, 1% there. So kind of odd mixture over in Asia compared to the rest of the world. Bonds, pretty steady at 1.36. The Bund, minus 0.31. Japan, positive 0.11, like they have been. Well, like they have been for the last few days. Oil, up again, 23 cents, 61.91. Brent up 30 cents, 65.54. Natural gas down a nickel, 289. The top tick there, I think, was the 312, maybe, or 320, somewhere in there. Nice sale if you did it. RBOB unchanged at 184. We've got gold up again, but not very much today, up $1.50, 18.09. It's up. It's back up almost $60 since the 1750 of a few days ago. So gold makes a big return here. Silver down 13 cents, 27.95. Copper unchanged at 413. Yes, 413. What a nice buy that was down in the 240 range. God, why didn't we do that? Ugh. And we also have crypto down 5,000. Bitcoin down 5,000, 48.847. I think they topped out around, Maddie said 56 or 57. So they're down roughly 10 from their high. Maddie, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have an issue on the Eisenhower, I-290 on the outbound side at Damon. There's a crash that's been moved to the right shoulder, and that has the outbound Ike all jammed up. Normal travel times on the inbound side, but we're starting to see a lot of red on I-290, so keep that in mind whether you're heading out to the Western Burbs or coming into downtown. The Kennedy, that earlier stalled vehicle on the outbound side at Nagel, has been cleared, but there's all kinds of red and congestion in both directions on the Kennedy. That's probably our slowest moving expressway right now, but no current accidents or stalls. Edens looks okay. Heading south, Stevenson looks okay, a little red near Cicero, but no accidents to report. Southside expressways are quiet, no issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Off the expressways, one crash in the area, that's Army Trail Road at Meadow Road in the western burbs. And then we have a Metra situation in LaGrange. Expect long delays on Metra's BNSF line. Inbound and outbound trains are currently stopped after a pedestrian was apparently hit in LaGrange. That will affect the morning train there, if that's your train. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful winter day today. Sunshine, a high of 40. We're going to melt a lot of this snow like we have been the last couple of days, but today it's really going to melt.
In your roof, in your house.
That's right. Right now it is crystal clear and 38 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 80 today. Right now it's clear and 46. In sports, the Bulls have now won 4 out of 5 and find themselves in the playoff picture. They're currently the 8th seed in the East after they blew out the Rockets in Houston last night, 120-100. Suns blew out the Blazers, 122-100. In hockey, Blackhawks were off. They're back in action tonight in Columbus. They'll take on the Blue Jackets at 6 p.m. Chicago time. Coyotes played last night. They topped the Ducks 4-3. Chief.
Maddie, last night, I don't know, for some reason, I'd forgotten who the Bulls' first couple of draft picks ever were, so I was digging through the NBA draft history. Jeff, you remember that. They used to have something like 18 or 20 rounds.
Yeah, they had a ton of rounds. And now they have two.
Well, there were years where the Bulls drafted, you know, how old it was, 15, 20 guys, and only one or two or three of them ever played an NBA game. Go back to the early years. It's unbelievable how many people, you know. They put the people's, you know, NBA record after that, and this draft thing I was looking at, and there are guys that you know, literally, you know, out of 15 people, never played a game. You just went to, you drafted them, you brought them to practice.
Well, you're drafting that many rounds, it becomes like Major League Baseball, where that happens every year in Major League Baseball. You draft a guy in the 27th round; he's very unlikely to ever play.
But at least there's like nothing after these guys. And at least he played, you know, 2 months in AAA before he decided he was no good.
That's true. I assume most of these guys either went to work for a real job, or if there was some sort of, you know, CBA type league, or, you know, there used to be more leagues outside of the NBA that you could go play in. You weren't making much money, but
I still remember Jeff.
ABA, of course.
Who was the Bulls' official first draft? I mean, they didn't give him the number one pick. I think they gave him two picks, the 10th and the 20th, their first year. They didn't get the number one, which is weird. Who's the first guy?
First guy ever?
Yeah, the Bulls.
First guy in the draft?
The first guy the Bulls ever drafted.
Which would be 1966, yeah. So I doubt many of our listeners know this answer.
I
would not know that.
A guy named Dave Shellhouse.
I would not know that. But I do have a question, though. Hey, Matt, is that your voice doing that ChiroMed commercial?
Yes.
I thought so, yeah. You've got a career in that.
He does. He does.
That song is earwormed its way, or whatever that word is, into my head. I always hear you again with that backdrop of that song all day long after I hear it once.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. All right. It's catchy.
Jeff, we had a couple guys in the OEX pit that if somebody like hummed a tune, there were a couple of people that could not get the tune out of their brain the whole rest of the day and be like pissed off at the guy for humming it. There were guys that just could, especially if it was like a catchy rock tune for a song they liked, and they just could not get rid of it. All right, Jeff, I want to ask you, even though you're spending a lot of your time on the magazine and stuff, you still obviously think and care a lot about the market. What are you sensing with all of a sudden, I'm not going to lead the witness here, but it appears, and your man Mike agrees with me, that there's a tone change here in the interest and interest rates and the way this is all coming down and the risk characteristics of what people are buying versus not buying. Some of the big companies people have wanted have changed. What do you sense going on here with the Fed? I mean, I looked at the Fed balance sheet last night. God's sake, it's up $155 billion last week at a new record. And now this guy's going in front of Congress today, and he's evidently promising people another $2 trillion if they come up with the plan. Where does somebody who's looking at this not every single second like me, where I might be seeing the can't see the forest because of the trees. Well, what are you making of all this? Where do you think this goes?
Keeps going for a while. You know, the volatility of the market. It's been a kind of a structural decline. You can't be pumping all this money in, endless amounts of money into the market, supporting all these asset classes without this result. It's like no one wants to buy downside protection puts anymore, right? It's just
expensive.
A waste of premium. The markets just don't go down. So volatility goes down, the index moves higher, and you know, you've got a trend that's just seemingly unstoppable.
I was mentioning yesterday that when I used to do the work for Pullman on the inflation and the contracts and escalation clauses, are we at a point now where I should make a lot of money going to places as a consultant saying, if you sign up for a five-year deal now and you don't have an escalation clause in there, you're not only a moron, you're probably going to take your company under? Are we at that point?
That's not a bad gig. That's right.
Have you seen one? When's the last time you saw an escalation clause in a 4 or 5 year contract?
That's a good point. It's a good point.
I mean, all this stuff is totally forgotten. That you need, you know, you might need stuff like that. And I don't know.
Particularly now, where you would think that exposure is greater, but that's just contrary to. Yeah, it's contrary to thinking. Even after the GameStop, you know, the volatility just came back down so quickly, right after all that. You know, it was like a blip that's already passed completely. It's like forgotten.
Well, on my IB machine here.
It shot up like to around 33, the VIX at that point, but now, you know.
Well, the last couple of days.
The dollar index around 91, you know.
Well, we're back up to 20, almost 25 today from almost getting under 20, and but there's a big difference. I mean, two things have happened. By the way, you just opened up two cans of worms. Yeah. The amount of companies that, I'll say 3 weeks ago, wasn't that long ago, that had volatilities with the you know, the Reddit and all that other kind of stuff in the 300s, 400s, and 500s, which is incredible. Those have dropped dramatically. I have a big screen here on my IB stuff that lets me know what the implieds are. It's real hard to find someplace now in over 100, much less over 2 or 3. That has calmed down dramatically. But still, as Mike was saying yesterday, the idea of a implied volatility or a VIX in, you know, September of a 23 or 4 or 5 is really hot. I mean, it's 50% higher than normal. I mean, like the broad market volatility is real high. I mean, the individual stocks that you and I were talking about 2 weeks ago, there are not as many of those going crazy as there were then. That stopped, like you say, pretty quickly. But the rest of the stuff is still there. I mean, it's constantly a tale of about four markets every day, isn't it? That's the weird part of it. And I wouldn't have thought that as all these other stocks went to the moon, all of a sudden that you want to be a huge short in Apple and Microsoft. I mean, what in the last 5 years would ever want you to be short Apple or Microsoft, for God's sake? That your best trade of the day was the short Apple or a bike puts and was 145. I would not have guessed that there, would you?
No, not at all.
It's kind of crazy. Would you guess the cruise lines were massive winners yesterday in a down day? I mean, what do people see there?
I can't imagine cruise lines being winners in any scenario.
Well, you're more closer.
If you even know someone who's been on a cruise in the last 2 years?
No.
3 years?
No.
No.
No, neither do I. Do you know anyone who's been in the GameStop store for the last 2 or 3 years?
Definitely not.
No.
No. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I don't see how, Jeff, I mean, for me, obviously, if you just stick your head in the sand and say, I protect everything, I don't have to look at anything, what would possess me to put my clients, some of whom are listeners, into like a cruise line? How do I even find out if they're even afloat? How's that for the term? How do I even know what the status of the got to be a couple of $1 billion it keeps to maintain these ships that are sitting in port, and you got to keep some of your people on them? I'm sure they got some money from the government. They probably participated in the PPP. I'm sure there's cash coming from them, but I don't know any of that stuff. How do you know enough to pour money into Carnival Cruise Line or Royal Caribbean? they may actually have gotten such good deals from the government and everybody else's government, they might actually be a terrific buy. How the hell would anybody know? How do you know they got to have borrowed money from somebody? How do you know the terms of that? It's real strange trying to put money in one of those places. And I don't know about the airlines too. How are they not broke? Other than government largesse, right? I mean, I'm not saying I want them to be broke. I'm not saying we don't need them.
Nope.
I'm just saying, sure. How does anybody have any idea of what their actual financial condition is?
Well, but we know the answer. They are broke. Same. It's like a restaurant. The airlines are no different than a restaurant, right? You don't have asses in the seats. You don't have a chance to survive. You certainly don't pay your costs. The overhead for the airlines is extraordinary.
But they were getting paid
We know what their situation is. Same thing with the cruise line. No one's been on a cruise in a year, so we know where they are. No one's been in a restaurant. No one's been on a plane. We know what these businesses look like. What we don't understand is how the stocks are going up.
Well, can you even make a stab at what it takes for one of these big monster cruise ships sitting in port to keep the thing clean and running and ready to go on a daily basis? It's like Boeing. They had 400 and some 737s sitting in the ground. Can you even imagine the tab for that? Not to mention getting them ready to fly and retrofitting them once they got approved, because there was software and there was hardware too, right? I'm not positive about that. But what was it? How many? 1,000 hours a plane to get it ready to go? Plus, you just start the thing up after all this time and say, here we go, or what? I don't know if I want to be that pilot. How long have we been sitting here? 2 years or a year and a half? Yeah, fire it up. This will run. I mean, I get, these guys are good at what they do. So, I mean, I would, if they said it was ready, I'd believe them. But, boy, oh, boy, it just seems like the undertaking. It's hard. If you haven't been involved in a situation like that, and I was with Pullman, because we had our first car that finally got approved, Jeff, was car 13. So cars 1 through 12 were total retrofits because the change orders came through. I mean, on a very small scale, and we're talking about a railroad car which probably had 100,000 parts versus a plane which, what, has 500,000 parts maybe, at least? I mean, I can't even imagine if you multiplied the hassle we went through at Pullman, getting those Amtrak cars out, if you multiplied that by like 100 or 200, I don't even know where you'd be. It's like dropping me in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and saying, swim. I mean, I had trouble putting my hands around on it when I was at Pullman. I mean, and everybody did. And the scale wasn't even close to what these guys are going through. How do you go to some place in some storage area? It's like guys that I knew at Pullman, they'd ship planes to Vietnam. They weren't ready to fly yet, but they wanted delivery and they wanted the money. So the thing would sit on the ground, and all of a sudden, like the dashboard, for lack of a better term, what do you call the dashboards in a car? What do you call the parts that are in what looks to be the dashboard in a plane? These guys would show up in a Jeep. One of the guys was a Pullman plant engineer. He was at work for Lear Sigler, and he'd go from place to place in a Jeep, dodging bullets with his stuff in the back of the Jeep, and he'd go in there, and he'd put the stuff in two or three planes, and he'd say, okay, these are ready to fly tomorrow morning. I mean, can you imagine doing that to 400 and some, well, at least they're not shooting at you, but, I mean, the job is overwhelming, Jeff. I mean, how do you even put a number on it?
I could not imagine, but I was entertained by that recollection. What exactly did you do at Pullman?
I was a financial analyst, but I ended up being the financial program manager of the MBTA car company, or the MBTR contract, which made me the guy at PCW1. So I was the financial guy at PCW1. And if you ever, when you're talking in a place like that, if you're willing to, just when you show up, just jump in somebody's office and listen. You got an education in the two or three years I was there that made my college education. There were guys that were helicopter engineers from Boeing. There were guys that were electrical engineers from this place and that place. If you were just willing to sit down and listen, you got a college class every morning from these guys. And you'd go out and talk to people in the plant, and how do you do this, and how does this machine work? If you had the curiosity, which you know I do, you would have loved that job, Jeff, because you have the same sort of curiosity I do. That's why I love having you come out here. You'd have been the same kind of guy. You would not have been at your office at your desk. You'd have been out talking to these guys, and you learn constantly. But you learn from you know, any kind of, if there's a this thing conks out, how these engineers would come back with a plan. These guys are really good. The guys I thought that were the most spectacular, and they probably aren't, it's just because I could never do it, were the manufacturing engineers. Now, you probably know who that is, but most people don't even. Manufacturing engineer, if somebody puts together, say, the side of a railroad car, here's all the parts, here's the drawing, here's what it's supposed to look like, and hands it to you. The manufacturing engineer takes one look at it and goes, okay, you start with this part and that part and this screw, and you put those two together, and that's how you start. And they make 100 procedures that if you do all of them in each sequence, you got a side of a car. Those guys were able to see how to make the thing from looking at the drawing, which I always thought was spectacular knowledge. I could never do that.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. It's one thing to say, this is what the side looks like. That I probably could have got to the point where I could have done, because I could think like that. But it was all over. I probably couldn't have told you how to build the thing I just designed. Those guys could. And it was a spectacular skill set, I thought. Maybe because I didn't have it. Why, you always think that the guy who has a skill set that you don't have is the smartest man on earth. As much as I give our man Thomas, I would love to be able to draw like he can. I mean, I can't even imagine how you can do that. If I drew a stick man, he'd be a big fatso. I mean, I can't even do that. Yet, some people can look at something and put it on paper, and you say, how the hell do you even do that? But these guys had all kinds of... Anything you wanted. It was like the trading floor in a lot of ways. If you wanted a plumber, they knew a plumber. If you wanted... I heard stories about... One guy was a jockey at the racetrack, and I heard stories about they'd rig a if a barn couldn't pay their bill, they'd let that guy's horse win the next so he could pay his bill. I mean, the people show in a factory is like a trading floor. The only place I could even begin to compare it to, when you get that many people in one room, all with different skills. And so, probably not more much of a long answer for you, but that's where I get all this.
I hear you.
It's, you know, it's
speaking of stick men and the smartest guy in the room, what do you think about Pritzker's recent move? I there's some House resolution he just signed about no cash bail yesterday. Have you looked into that at all?
I understand the part that you have people that aren't all that maybe not all that violent and not a danger to you or me or Maddie, that are in jail because they can't come up with a certain amount of money for like a real long period of time, essentially hanging out with people you don't really want them to hang out and you know, you're going to get worse instead of better. I get that part, and I would like to see that fixed, changed, however you do it. But to say that anybody shows up after a crime, you just let them go on their own recognizance, I don't... They just did something to somebody, probably. And if you let them right back out, I don't know how you tell the next person that they do something too, that's okay. I mean, I don't know how, whether it's thought through properly or not. Does there need to have been a fix? Yeah, but I mean, we have an attitude now that all these people in jail are all really innocent and are all really good people. No, they're not. There's bad people all over the place.
So why is it that something so obvious is your take on that? That yes, there are some systemic elements, that again bring up racism when you talk about our cash bail requirements and those protocols, and that unfairly, you know, disadvantage those already disadvantaged, and that there are systemic problems around our bail system. How do you take that then and eliminate it completely?
I don't know how you do
it. How is it that nuance is always lost? You know, it's either all or none. How does that even happen?
Well, the if you look at one of the most fascinating things I listen to, and you know, I don't know why I remember this stuff, Jeff, but I do. The sheriff before, what's the guy's name? The Irish name that Sheehan. He was a sheriff Sheehan was on one of the Saturday morning shows, and I was listening to him, and he said, "You know, the people we get in here." Now, this is before the Tinley thing was shut down. Everybody keeps forgetting that part. But the Tinley Mental Health Hospital, I don't know what you want to call it now, but it's probably politically incorrect, but if you had mental health problems, you could go to, I mean, Tinley was the place. So they said, okay, we're closing Tinley, we're letting all these people out, essentially. And a lot of them found their way to county jail with misdemeanors of stealing food because they can't really work or anything. So it became the second, the biggest healthcare facility around, the jail, which is not what it's designed for. So that's a problem. But he said, right. We bring people in here, And most of them have the reading capability of a sixth grader, and when they leave, they still do. Why are we shocked they come back? There's no schooling there. There's no craft work. We're going to teach a guy to at least how to do oil changes on cars so he can go to work at Jiffy Lube. There's none of that happening. There's no positive things happening. I won't say none, but there's very little positive things happening there that where you take people that are there that are able to be reformed, because I think a lot of them are. There's no program, Jeff. I mean, so we just keep doing the same things we always did, expecting a different result. And now we have people that say, well, the solution is they're not all really all that bad. Let's let them all out and see how bad they really are. And by the way, shoplifting is not a problem. Well, it is if it's your store, right? I mean, we're putting this whole, none of these people are really guilty. Well, come on, that's not true either. So as usual, the truth is in the middle, and it takes money, and people sit down and come up with a plan, and we don't seem to be able to do that at all. Where am I wrong?
Well, and then the outcomes are always, reflected in crime data.
Yeah, or not.
I think that, yeah, right, or not. And that's going to be the problem, I think, always.
And I
noticed that this new, it's House Bill 3653 that Pritzker signed, that, of course, Kim Fox, called it a step in the right direction in this great, great moment. But it also allows for anonymous complaints against police officers and in disciplinary hearings. So there's a real question about due process there and the equal protection.
Well, Jeff, unbeknownst to most.
I think it's very, very troublesome.
Clearly,
there had to be some adjustments in the bail system. But when you include burglary and arson, and some felonies.
Let's tee this up next week, because you probably know the jail population is already, what, 60% or half it was 3 years ago. They've already done this before there was a law change. There's way less people than there were a couple of years ago. Does that mean the crime rate's lower? I don't think so. just saying. All right, Jeff, let's talk about it. Thank you, buddy. And hey, everybody, Luckbox Magazine. Let's make sure next week we'll probably have it where we can we'll tell everybody how to get it, right? It's not published yet.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy.
See you, Matt.
SP Futures down 19. NASDAQ Futures down 203 now. 2 days in a row there. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.